Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Catherine Wilson, here to talk about Middlesbrough Football Club, and you can follow me at BaseLady on Twitter.
My name is Dylan Arvella. Most of my football writing is for Football South Coast, but for the sake of this podcast, I'll be talking about Manchester United. And I'm on Twitter at Dylan Arvella.
Hello, I'm Dan from West Bromwich Albion website, 1878.net. You can find me on Twitter at TheWatts22, or you can find me on the website on Twitter at 1878_WBA, I think. That's very bad that I don't know that.
That felt pretty convincing. But thanks so much for joining us, everyone. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. We'll start with you, Catherine. Obviously, looked like a very tough match heading into it, but then you played very well yourselves and surely came away from that match feeling you should have gotten all 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. So it's been quite an interesting week for us. We actually managed to claim our first win of 2017 during the week against Sunderland, which is very exciting. Quite weird, though, in a way where it felt like the points were kind of irrelevant for both teams because we're kind of in that very poor situation down the bottom of the table there. So Manchester City yesterday was quite worried about it. Wasn't particularly looking forward to it, but actually it's probably the best I've seen us play this season. The crowd were great. Everyone was still really behind the team and on their side. And it was the first time in a long time that I've seen real passion and commitment, and we actually looked like doing something, and we did. So it was a good match for Negredo, who scored against his old club. Couldn't help but feel a little bit aggrieved that we didn't come away with all 3 points after such a brilliant performance.
Yeah, totally understandable. And we'll talk about decisions a little bit later. But how have you felt as a fan this season of a team that has been so strong defensively but just hasn't been able to find the goals? Coming into this match, we're last place in goals scored at home. Is that frustrating?
Yeah, it is. I completely understood the way that the previous manager, Aitor Karanka, was trying to set the team up in a very defensive first kind of way and to break on the counter-attack. But it just became more and more apparent that we didn't have, we didn't have the quality in midfield to bridge that gap and to get enough support up to Negredo. So while we had that excellent defence for most of the season, there's only so much pressure you can put them under before it all goes wrong. So, yeah, it's been quite difficult. I've tried to stay positive. And I guess now it just looks like we're trying to make the best end to the season under our caretaker manager, Steve Agnew. It's very, very unlikely that we will stay up, but I think we can definitely start planning for next year.
Yeah, I definitely think it's sad that you're most likely, you know, I don't think it's mathematically confirmed yet, but heading down, but keeping everything together and staying healthy and everything as a club is definitely very important when switching divisions. Dan, I'd like to talk to you about Tony Pulis. Because I actually got to catch a match with you when I was over there in England at the Hawthorns. There were people saying that they wouldn't be back while Pulis was still there. And surely that hasn't changed considering his record, once getting to 40 points, is abysmal. It very much looks like his teams pretty much give up once that happens. And unfortunately, that seems to be happening again.
Well, yeah, I think the statistic is one win, from all of the teams he's managed, once the team that he's managing got to 40 points.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I don't want to go on too much because I don't want to sound like I'm a bit sore from it, but I'm, you know, it's okay. We've got 40 points. We've got 44. We're in the Premier League again next season. You know, we're consecutively staying up season after season. We haven't had any real threat of relegation. And we've got some decent players at the club. And we've got a decent fan base. You know, it's not bad times to be an Albion fan. So let's get that caveat out of the way. But it's frustrating being a Baggies fan because every season you know what you're going to get. If you get knocked out of the FA Cup in January, it's going to be a long slog to the end of the season. It's more than likely we're going to stay up, but then there's absolutely nothing to look forward to. And it's the same for many clubs in and around us. You know, it gets quite dull towards the end of the season because you're literally playing for 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th spot. And it's because the excitement isn't around the games before kickoff. I think the players themselves get a bit lacklustre because they know they've already managed to succeed in their task and in keeping the team up, whether that's subconsciously or even consciously. And so I just think the season has completely petered out for us. And as much as, you know, like I say, we thought we've got to 40 points and we you know, effectively safe again in the Premier League for next season. It's just that the last 7 or 8 games have been tough to watch. The Arsenal game in between all of those in which we won 3-1 is the only bright spot from an absolutely awful last 8 games. We've only scored in 1 of those 8 games. So 7 of our last 8 games, we've failed to score. Mm. So for any fan going, I mean, knowing I was going to the match the weekend at home to Leicester, I really didn't think that we were going to score. I just genuinely had no. There was a bit of a lack of excitement around the ground, and it is. I can't really put my finger on it because Tony Pulis has got the team playing good, effective, decent attacking football at times this season. It's not, you know, we don't ever peg teams back, and we've probably got the least amount of possession for teams in the league. But we've just shown absolutely none of what we've shown before in our last 7 games. And it surely can't be a coincidence that this has come after we've secured our Premier League safety. And it's not just something that's just happened this season either. It happens season after season. Now, of course, I don't want to sound like Sale Graves because I've got people on. There's people on this podcast now that wish they were eighth in the league, and I'm not going to moan too much. But, you know, at the end of the day, we pay a lot of money to watch football, especially in the Premier League. And it's not particularly very exciting being a Baggies fan. I've got no idea how that's going to change. A change of manager might give us that edge in terms of a bit of excitement, bringing in more attacking players, being less rigid. But then the owners will rightfully point to the fact that Pulis almost guarantees safety season upon season. And then that comes back round to the fact that gives the club money. And football is so money driven at the minute that the fans seem to be forgotten about. So, I mean, you know, as long as the club are raking in the 100-odd million plus in TV revenue every season, who cares? You know, that's what football is now, isn't it? So the game itself against Leicester, we were absolutely shockingly bad. Barely created a chance. Rondon gave the ball away in the middle of the park for Vardy to run through and score. No real moments of note for the Albion. A couple of shots straight at Schmeichel. In fact, Schmeichel made one good save from a header in the first half from Brunt. And that's pretty much it. It was absolutely boring, like it was for most Premier League games on Saturday. I think they all finished 0-1 or 0-2. So, Yeah, you've got depressing Dan back, I think.
Well, that, not super great to hear that. Hope you feel better. But you mentioned the lack of creating chances. Obviously, in this stretch, the goal scoring has not been there. Do you put that up to the forwards, or do you put that up to the creators, or do you put that up to the coaching?
I put that up to Phillips was out for a spell, and on his return, he hasn't looked the player he was, and now he's back out injured again. He was a big, important player for us. The transition of the ball working its way through the midfield to the forward players isn't quick enough, or as quick as it has been this season at times. That is mainly in part due to Darren Fletcher's absolutely abysmal passing ability. The amount of times he gave the ball away in our last home game, you were there, Kev, it was absolutely horrifically bad. And I'm not just saying that. If it was a young kid, then he would have got absolutely stacks of abuse from the crowd. Or if he was a name that wasn't Darren Fletcher, because, you know, and the problem for me is I don't want to see Darren Fletcher getting away with that performance just because his name is Darren Fletcher and he played for Man United and he's won trophies. Doesn't matter who you are, what your name is. If you're playing shit, then you should not be anywhere near the team. Luckily, Tony Pulis has saw that and he did drop him for the game against Leicester. It didn't make too much of a difference. But to be honest, I think the whole squad just seemed to be looking very jaded. Rondon isn't scoring at all at the minute. But asking any striker to score numerous amounts of goals playing in the system that Tony Pulis plays, he's asking for a miracle anyway. He's so isolated a lot of the time, looking for players to join him in the attack and they're nowhere near him, being asked to run into the channels, being asked to hold the ball up and wait 5, 6, 7 seconds for players to join him. Do you know what? I can understand why the man is so frustrated. No striker in the world is going to score with maybe one chance a game every week. It just isn't going to happen because he barely gets that. So I can't really blame anyone yet. I think it is just a squad as a whole. We've got to 40 points. And as much as people don't want to say this or the players won't accept this criticism, but there's no other way of saying that we're on the beach and that's it. Look forward to next season. Just get the last few games out of the way and look towards what hopefully will be a more exciting season next year.
Yeah, I think the Baggies fans definitely deserve that. Dylan, with Manchester United, just realized how not super excited this group will be after recent results. Manchester United obviously drawing in what is a very important run-in to try to get that fourth spot. Obviously interested to hear about the match on the whole, but also a lot of people questioning Pogba this season, and then some people saying these past two matches without him show what he has been doing for this team that people haven't been noticing. Is that your view as well?
I'll tackle the Pogba point first. I feel like he has been harshly criticised by some people throughout football, but I do feel that you could see his lack of the lack of energy in the midfield over the last two games that he brings to the side. But I also feel that on the ball, he hasn't offered enough for United this year in terms of assists, in terms of passes that have led to goals before the assists, rather, and goals itself. I feel he's a fantastic player. He's a fantastic athlete. But so far this season, even though some people will say that he chuck out all these stats saying how, oh, look, his pass completion, whatever, la, 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 I feel that for the money that we've spent so far, he hasn't come to the party quite as much as we would have liked. But saying that, he's still a United player, hopefully for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And I can see him as a key part of a United side that's going to be winning stuff in the future. But looking back on I'll just pop back to the midweek Manchester derby, which was our first big game post Ibra. So basically, it was a game that a win could have seen us move into the top four. But for some reason, Mourinho seemed happy to set up for a draw. We were without Ibra. We were without a number of key players. But I felt even though we were away from home, we should have went for the win. And in the end, we put in a pretty dour performance. The big talking point of that game was the Fellaini red card, which, you know, for those who haven't seen it, have a check it out on YouTube. It's pretty stupid, really, to get sort of baited by Aguero in that sense. And thankfully, that means he misses a few games because I think he goes through patches of four or five games where you think, oh, maybe he can bring something to this United side, but he's a mid-table player, and for the club United want to be, he's nowhere near the calibre needed. Moving forward to the Swansea game, a couple of days ago, it's actually a shame Guido isn't on to give a more positive view on this game, because fair play to Swansea in the position they're in. They put in a fantastic performance, and the big talking point coming out of this game was the penalty awarded to Manchester United after Rashford went down in the box. At first, I did think Lucas Fabianski did touch Rashford, but the replays show that he might have got a part of his body to Rashford, but it was a dive, and that's the way I see it. All the news regarding Rashford has been positive up to this point, but really he's lost his innocence now. And basically a lot of people will now see him as, how they'd see a 25-year-old footballer without sort of giving him the benefit of the doubt of being sort of this fresh-faced guy. And there's part of me, Guido put out a tweet, obviously aggrieved by the decision just before halftime. And I replied saying how upset he was with the decision. I said pretty much that I wouldn't have been upset if he missed, because I hate seeing those sort of things. I understand that you're someone that toes the line, that if the opposition makes the referee have to make a decision, then that's their fault. But I think there's also a line, and I think Rashford crossed that line, because he was down before Fabianski even came for him. Second half, United didn't really improve, even though they had the goal advantage. And in the end, Gylfi Sigurdsson, a player that's, I think, is one of the classiest in the Premier League, simply knocked in a free kick. It was interesting. Herrera moved back onto the goal line in an effort to stop that, but Fernando Llorente moved up closer, so Ander Herrera moved back up into the wall, and a couple of seconds later, Gylfi put the ball exactly where Herrera was. So fair play to him. And in the end, Swansea deserved the point, and if anyone deserved to win, it definitely wasn't Manchester United, unfortunately. Out of this game, Luke Shaw went down with what looks like to be another knee injury, which is a shame, because he seemed to be starting to get game time for Manchester United, which seemed unlikely a month or so ago after Mourinho had been lambasting him in the press. Also, Eric Bailly picked up another injury, which doesn't look too promising, which means that United has a pretty lengthy injury list, especially in defence. We've got Phil Jones out, Chris Smalling, Marcos Rojo, who some reports say could be out for 7 or 8 months. Fosu Mensah, Luke Shaw and Bailly, and add to that, so that's what, six defenders, quality defenders. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic is our top goal scorer we've got out at the moment. But still, it's a poor week for United. 4 more points and we would have been in third. And really, it's just continuing a relatively poor league season. We're lucky that Manchester City drew against Borough. From some from some things I've seen around the place, I didn't watch this particular match, but Borough came really close to actually picking up the 3 points, which would have been tremendous. And just to let you behind the curtain, we're recording during the Liverpool game, which I have an eye on, which is currently 0-0. So hopefully Watford can get up there to maybe give United another chance to make it in the top four, even though, to be fair, they probably don't deserve it at this stage. Continuing the worst unbeaten run in the history of the Premier League.
Wait, are you back in sixth now?
No, we're in fifth.
Okay. All right, good.
But that just gives us hope, which isn't good.
Wait. I still think you have a decent chance of catching Liverpool, although, as you said, that match is still happening at this moment. If you were on a scale of 1 to 10 with your chances of making Champions League this year, where would you fall?
If you take in consideration Europa League, I'd say 8. I'm pretty confident we still make the Europa League and make the Champions League in some way or another.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see that, because I believe that also has financial ramifications with the kit sponsors and all kinds of stuff. So It'd definitely be better to just do that and not have to worry about figuring that all out over the summer. As for Tottenham, we had a pretty low-key week. I mean, just the last ever North London derby at White Hart Lane. But aside from that, not much. Obviously, just a massive, massive fixture. I was freaking out, as I'm sure every Spurs fan was heading into this one. Even though we've clearly been the better team this season, not just in the table, but basically since January, we've been the best team in the league. The other obvious concern was that Moussa Dembele did not start. He's been just so terrific for us this season. And then Kyle Walker also didn't start, but we'll get into that whole situation here in a little bit. There was definitely concern coming into this match. And then the first 15 minutes, they outplayed us. They were pressing high. They were really just chasing everything down, and it seemed like we were on the back foot there for the most part at the beginning of the match. But then things finally started to turn around. Ali had a header that he arguably should have put in, but Oxlade-Chamberlain kind of put him off the header. Up to you if you think he should have put it in or not. Then Eriksen had a chance off of a wonderful run by Son, where they were playing Oxlade-Chamberlain as a wingback, and this is when we found out that you shouldn't do that, because Son just had a field day on him for the most part. He just left him in the dust, had a shot that got parried, which pulled Petrček out of goal. Eriksen very much should have just slotted in, but unfortunately was unable to do so. So then we head to the half at 0-0. Every single Spurs fan obviously fearing that those chances would come back to haunt us. But then basically from the beginning of the second half to the end of the match, we were clearly the better team. End up getting the Ali goal, which was absolutely huge for us after just a beautiful bit of play from Eriksen in the box, just constantly keeping his feet moving and avoiding all of the Arsenal players that were there. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain also had a chance to clear that, the Ali shot off the goal line, but missed it. And then later, there was the penalty situation. We've already talked about a few of these. And I'm just now realizing that we actually have all three covered with Sané and Catherine's match and Rashford and Dylan's and Kane and mine. But I do not think that this was a dive. It does bring up the interesting conversation of, does the attacking player have a responsibility to avoid contact? We'll again get into that more, but as we've always said on the show, you can't put yourself in that situation. And while I do think Kane probably made more of that contact than there should be, it was a foul and it was in the box, and for me was therefore a penalty. But then he took it brilliantly anyway. Then later on in the match, Alexis had a clear handball in the box that wasn't called. So kind of balance of averages, et cetera, for us. But obviously then we just rode it out. We had a couple more chances. It really could have been, 4 or 5 from us in the end. But Petrček had a huge match. He had 9 saves on top of the two shots that ended up being goals. But it really could have gotten out of hand. And I don't think anybody watched that match and thought that Arsenal was anywhere near our level, at least on the day. The end result of this, obviously, is that we are going to finish ahead of Arsenal for the first time in 20 years, which is just fantastic for us. A lot of Arsenal fans bashing us for enjoying finishing ahead of them, despite the fact that they celebrate what they call St. Totteringham's Day every year, and they're surprised and somewhat frustrated that we're doing it back. I personally haven't done that a whole lot, just because, man, you never know how things could go wrong. But obviously, that's huge. We basically sealed Champions League. We're 1 point away from ensuring that we'll be in next season's Champions League, although it's felt like we've definitely been favorites for that for quite some time now. Now the Kyle Walker thing. I said I'd come back to it. News stories breaking today that Kyle Walker and Mauricio Pochettino have had a fallout, and he's definitely leaving in the summer. So here's the deal. The whole Kyle Walker thing has started with the fact that he hasn't started a couple of the big matches recently, most notably the Chelsea match and the FA Cup semifinal, and then obviously the Arsenal match. But, and I tweeted this out earlier today, if you look at the last 10 matches Tottenham have played, he's literally played every other one. And for some reason, everyone has forgotten that we rotated both pairs of fullbacks down the stretch last season. This is not new, nor surprising. It just happened to fall the way against Kyle Walker. Is it possible that he is frustrated that he's not started these two big matches? Absolutely. He's one of the most Tottenham till I die people there. There's even a Vine attesting to that fact that a lot of people were retweeting today. But players that fall out with Mauricio Pochettino do not end up on the bench. They end up gone. They end up playing with the youth teams, like we saw with Townsend, like we saw with Adebayor, like we saw with Kapu, like we saw with Benteleb. This is very much a thing that has happened in the past, players falling out with Pochettino, and they do not get to stick around. They very quickly disappear from all social media stuff. They aren't in any of the team photos when they do like the photos at training. They just vanish. And that has not been the case with Kyle Walker. Do I think he wants to play more matches? Absolutely. Is it possible that he leaves? Yes, but this whole, he's had a row, he's been dropped, he's fighting with Pochettino, I just do not believe for a second. This whole double rotation of wingbacks that we were doing last year is because we believed in Trippier and Davis, and I think Trippier has definitely put in performances this season that have warranted this rotation. The only reason we aren't seeing rotation at left back is because Rose has been hurt, so we've had to play Ben Davis there. Although we even did try to rotate that in the FA Cup. Not for better or worse. It was for worse. But with Sun Heung-min trying to play at left wing back. But anyway, I think this is a very big story that has come from very little, in my opinion. Do I believe the core that Walker wants to play more? Yes. But pretty much all the other stuff, I think, has been hyperbolized out of control.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, now we're going to head into the topic. We've talked about it already a couple times here. About these contentious decisions at the weekend. We're not going to blame the referees this week. We already have to do like three of those shows a year. We're going to go more on the player side because the Sané one was pretty clearly a dive without contact. The Rashford one, he kind of dragged and then jumped over Fabianski. The Kane one, he invited the contact before going down. Do you guys think that there is a kind of culture of diving, a problematic and systemic issue with that in the Premier League? And if so, how do you think it could be combated?
Yeah, I think it's. I think any kind of simulation, any kind of leaving your foot in, even any kind of jumping over a tackle and rolling around on the floor. To be honest, I think we should just see punishment if the referee sees it with a yellow card as such. But then we need to see retrospective punishment after the games. We also need to see managers. This is the key one, I think. We need to see managers condemning their own players, because until that happens, players are just going to continue to do it. We do see plenty of managers berating other teams' players or the opposition's players when they do such a thing, but it's never really. We've seen it probably on the odd occasion where managers probably don't stick up for their player as much. But we need to see managers openly condemning their own players on a regular basis. And we need to see much harsh. We need to see like 3-4 game bans if you're caught diving. Players need to stay on their feet as much as possible for the integrity of the game. And it just absolutely frustrates me because it gives football on the whole a bad name. You look at some of the sports that we've got around the world, and the prime example is probably rugby. Players will go full-blooded into tackles, bash their heads open, and they'll just get up and crack on with it. You know, it's no issue. We need to start seeing less of the Sanchez malark that we saw from the weekend where he pretended, did he split his lips slightly, did he? Poor baby. Absolutely ridiculous. These men need to grow a pair and start getting on with it and start, you know, behaving how you'd want, you know, your children to behave growing up. You want your children to be honest. You want them to be trustworthy. You don't want them rolling around on the floor trying to con the referee and con your opponent, because these players should be good enough to not do that.
Actually, I don't think that in the past couple of years things have got any worse. I think for the past 10 years this has been on the cards, it's been around, it's been happening. I think what's happened in more recent years is that referees do feel more empowered to do something about it now. And I do think that the standard of refereeing in the past 2-3 years has actually improved quite a lot. If you think about it now, we all know who the referees are and what they're like and which games we remember them refereeing. In the past, not so much. I think there's a lot more attention paid to the refs now and how they handle things. But in terms of the players, I think great shout from you there about managers disciplining their own players. But I mean, I think we've just had a bad weekend of it. A bit coincidental that there's been 3 really big penalties that have been given and that have been quite contentious. But actually, sort of looking back, I'm not sure that it's getting worse, if you know what I mean.
I want to speak a bit to what you guys have both sort of touched on in regards to the managers. Paul Clement, I thought he was pretty knowledgeable man, and he came out after the game and he said, "I'm not saying cheat, I'm saying deceived. It's the words I've chosen. I would use cheat another time. On this occasion, I'm saying he deceived him," being the referee in referring to the Rashford incident. And I think that's a fair point, because Rashford, it is his first time. There is people like Sanchez who, unfortunately for him, has developed a reputation for being someone that goes down very easily. But then you look at Mourinho, who, you know, puts out the typical line of saying, "I didn't view the incident, I didn't watch it, I have what Marcus has said." And he said the goalkeeper touched him. And, you know, that's what Arsene Wenger is a prime example of, someone that hasn't seen a football game in his life from what his press conferences sound like. But then you've got people like Gary Neville, who, of course, has been a manager himself, have been involved in a lot of coaching, obviously a pundit now. He's gone out on Twitter and said, his tweet was, he doesn't need to justify himself for winning his team a penalty. And you know what? That's what a lot of professionals seem to think, that especially when it's in relation to their team. But it's embarrassing, really. Like, I watch the game with a lot of people that – when I watch games with people that aren't football fans, the first thing that they say is, "Oh, why do they always go down so easy?" And I look at them and say, "Look, I have no idea. I really don't." And there's not much you can say because the professionals continue to put forward evidence saying that they do go down easily. I was at an amateur game on the weekend where there was a dive in the box. So it's not just the professionals; it's going all the way down to, you know, people earning, you know, $50 a week for playing football, rather. It's a bad look for the game. With the Rashford incident, I haven't seen the Sano one in particular. I did see the Kane one. I understand what you're saying in regards to that, Kevin. But the Rashford one, that's a perfect example of one where I feel you could easily dish out retrospective punishment, because all the replays and all the people that haven't, other than Gary Neville and Jose Mourinho and the United players, everyone seems unanimous in their thought that it was a dive. It's also a case, an incident where the video technology could have and would have been used and most likely would have changed the decision. It did seem on the weekend, I think it was Neil Strawbrick was the referee for the United game, wasn't going to give the penalty. And then I think on his linesman's advice, gave the penalty. There was a slight delay. But in the end, if retrospective punishment doesn't come in more readily, more often, and the video assistant referees don't come into play, it's a large part of it does come down to how the managers react to their own players. Because, yes, like people have mentioned already, managers are quick to criticise opposition players, but that doesn't really make much difference. It's when you're prepared to call out your own players. And that, Mourinho adding to the list of things that frustrates me about him, but, you know, he's not the only one for his part.
Yeah. I think this is a really interesting take. I hadn't really thought about the manager side of it. I know players have taken accountability in the past. I know Andros Townsend, when he was first coming through, had a pretty egregious dive and got carded for it. And after the match, he said, you know, he apologized to the fans and said that he didn't want people to think of him as that kind of player. And I thought that was very big of him. I think there are two things that could very much help. Oh, I obviously think it's an issue. I think there are two things that could help. The first is we need to see more referees giving fouls for players standing up. It happened in a Tottenham match earlier this season where it was pretty egregious and somebody was just dragging all over Dembele. But Dembele is just a very strong player and so tried to stay up to continue the chance. And it was one of those situations where, as a fan, you're very glad to see a player not diving. But simultaneously, you're in a match that I think was level at the time and saying, well, if he had gone down, we would have gone early. And I think that's kind of the, not to get too grandiose with this idea, but that's something that's kind of corrupting the nature of the game, that fans that inherently are against diving could be in a situation where even you have to step back and be like, oh, well, we could have been ahead if that had been called, if he had gone down. And I think that's a very big problem. I do think video refereeing is a way to go. I know some others may not agree with that. It's been tested in the Netherlands this year a lot, and it's gone very well over there. Although I do think there was one pretty big mistake that was made, which is always an issue with things that are still in their infancy, as if there is an issue with something like that, like a weird segue, but the self-driving cars, when like everybody thought there had been an accident, all of a sudden that could have really hurt that industry, but it turned out it was the guy's fault. Similar thing. It has to be almost perfect for it to be accepted by everybody, but I just think the referees don't get enough money in a sport with so many millions and millions of pounds for the kind of pressure they get, and B, with players that are constantly trying to kind of unfortunately deceive their way into things. I think managers calling out players is great. If more players could call themselves out, I think that'd be great. If the referees could call more standing fouls where the players don't have to go to ground just to get the call, that'd be great. And I think video refereeing is kind of an umbrella solution would really help. Maybe not eliminate, but at least go a far way towards getting us to a place where none of us have to worry about this week on week.
I just want to make it clear that I'm not a fan of video assistant referees. Just really? That's on the record.
Interesting. Any particular reason? I know, Catherine, you're not a particular fan either, so we'd be interested to hear the other side of that opinion.
I just feel it's a very clunky process. Of course, it can be refined. But even in other sports, I still don't think it's perfect. It's still there's a process that delays the game. I was speaking to you guys earlier. There was an incident in the Australian A-League on the weekend. I won't go into it too much, but if you Google A-League video assistant referee, you'll find it. And basically, the goal was disallowed. Play went on for about 30 seconds, and then it went back and the goal was given. And that was in our semi-final. So on the second biggest occasion in Australian football, you know, and even with the video assistant referee, it's pretty much 50-50 on whether the call was right. Because basically, once you introduce it, there's a can of worms of what are we ruling on? The Rashford one, going back to that, that's one where I feel the video assistant referee could make a call. But the Kane one, you know, that's I'm imagining you would agree that'd be something harder to say. Oh well, you did. There was more of a foul on Kane. Mm. So it's hard.
Exactly. For goal line technology, so we've got in the Champions League, we do have some kind of video assisted referee there. It's much more cut and dried as to whether the ball has definitely crossed the line there. There's obviously a lot more comes into play when it's a foul in the box. There's obviously loads of opinions, loads of angles to look at and so on. And I just think we need to be careful not to turn football into a science. And, you know, it'll just become very boring and you'll lose the real beauty of the game, which is the excitement that anything can happen. And even though my club were at the end of a particularly poor decision this weekend, that kind of is football. And, you know, you want to talk about the game and have things like that happen to keep it interesting in a way. Kind of sounds like I'm almost approving that penalty this weekend. But
I still think there'll be plenty of decisions on the field where they're going to be contentious. But I think when it comes to the really important decisions, that's when we need to be sure. I mean, I don't think we should have video refereeing for deciding whether it's a corner kick or a goal kick, or whether it's a throw-in, which way the throw-in's going, or, you know, a tackle in the centre circle that could go either way. I think we need video technology for the times when we want to spot diving, the times that we want to spot whether it's a two-footed tackle in the area or whether someone's handballed it clearly in the area where it's going
to... So would you just limit it to the penalty area then? Just everything happening within it?
That might well be a way of doing it, but I think with the technology that we've got now, I think it would be completely remiss of the game to completely ignore the ability to be able to get decisions right in key areas that are going to cost teams points and eventually cost teams a lot of money. And as much as, yeah, it is great for the spectacle to have Gary Neville and Carragher and Thierry Henry spending 20 minutes of their paid time to be a pundit discussing whether they think it was a handball in the box or not. Maybe those same pundits might talk about the passages of play that have led to a very good goal instead, because there's always going to be something to talk about with football. I don't think we're ever going to lose the beauty of the game in that regard, because, you know, I do feel sometimes that that pundits, their jobs are made very easily by players doing stupid things, and it would be better to see pundits talking about technical ability on a football pitch as opposed to constantly having to look at numerous decisions every game. There is probably two or three big key decisions that someone somewhere thinks someone's got wrong every single Premier League match. And so there's always that to talk about. Remove that away from it, and yeah, there's still plenty to talk about. And it might mean that that players get the praise that they deserve when it's warranted, and that pundits are needing to earn their money as opposed to, you know, discussing whether something was a penalty or not. That's my take on it.
I just think that is a really good point about the pundits, actually. You can see it when they're in the studio, they're obviously desperate for something contentious to happen, and then that's half-time wrapped up for them, isn't it? And they don't necessarily need to be any more knowledgeable than whoever's watching it down the pub at that particular point. I think that's an interesting point to make.
Yeah, because then it turns into a news show of one person saying it is and one person saying it isn't and just letting people choose a side.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think Dan saying it how it is once again on that point after the Rashford decision. Obviously, that led into halftime. The sort of segue before the break for the show, the halftime show, they were like, and of course, we'll mull over the big decision of the first half. And it's like, it sort of detracts from the fact that United have played honking in the first half and just looking at spending 5-10 minutes on one particular foul, one particular decision. And you're right. So anyone can do that. You've got professional footballers. Surely you can get something a bit more, maybe astute out of them.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points, but unfortunately we do need to head on from there into player watch, where we'll each quickly discuss a player that impressed and one that disappointed for us in our club's most recent fixture. If anyone didn't do one or the other, which it may be impressed for you guys if nobody did that, you could talk about somebody that stood out from the other side. We'll lead in with you, Catherine.
Well, I was very impressed this weekend at the Riverside after a fairly disappointing season, it has to be said, and being regularly disappointed. Almost everyone on the pitch was fantastic at the weekend. But the player I'm going to pull out is Callum Chambers, who is our defender on loan from Arsenal at the minute. And he recently had a couple of months out, but since he's come back from injury, next to Ben Gibson, looking really, really, really strong, and also got his first goal for us today. So it's going to be very interesting for Borough fans to see if we can potentially hang on to him in the summer. I'm not sure if he will have a future at Arsenal, but he's going to do very well wherever he goes.
Anybody that disappointed?
No, honestly. any other match that you'd had me on here, I'd be able to reel off a few, but there were some, as an excellent all-round team performance, and a few players who did very, very well, including Brad Guzan as well, who has come under fire lately for leaking quite a lot of goals and making bad decisions at free kicks, but he was also excellent.
All right, and Dan?
Player to impress.
It's gone that well, huh?
But yeah, it's really tough to pick out one man. I mean, Gareth McCauley, he had a knock to the head and he was bleeding everywhere, and he did a Terry Butcher style headband and then he decided to take it off and he was brave and everything. Maybe he should get it for that. In terms of players that didn't impress, and you know, Kevin, what highly I think of this player, Solomon Rondon, had a bad game. He gave the ball away to Vardy in the centre of the pitch. Sorry, he gave the ball, I think it was to Okazaki, who fed Vardy in for pretty much a one-on-one with Ben Foster, and he slotted away really well. And so I do have to say, Rondon did have a poor one. But, you know, I'm definitely very much behind him. He's clearly still got a talented footballer, despite many Albion fans being unwilling to back him in this current age of hatred towards footballers all the time. Just hope we can maybe pick up a point before the end of the season. That'd be cool.
Love the optimism. Dylan?
So probably in the City match, Blind was probably the most impressive player there. He's coming back into the centre-back partnership for Manchester United. There were some concerns about that, but I think he's a very smart player. I don't think he's got all the attributes to make a great centre-back, but I think he's smart enough and he adjusted well to coming back into Partner Bay for the City game. In the Swansea game, I can't say I was impressed with really anyone. Other than Gylfi, who everyone loves, he was fantastic for the Swans, and disappointed Rashford. You know, it was disappointing in the purest sense of the word. and Martial was a bit off it. Lingard had a pretty quiet game. There was a lot of Manchester United players not at the races in the Swansea game.
What was your view of the whole Herrera Sigurdsson mind games thing with Llorente kind of as the pawn there?
Do you mean for the free kick?
Yeah.
Well, as you're well aware, Sigurdsson's one of the best dead ball players in the Premier League. So on one hand, you know, Llorente, who's, you know, one of the best target men in the Premier League, the fact that he was there, Sigurdsson could have easily picked him out and then a one-on-one with De Gea. But on the other hand, obviously, Herrera's... Because I think Herrera would have stayed there if Llorente hadn't moved up. But clearly, you know, Llorente was watching the game. You could have argued Unlike that Wenger. Perhaps, you know... you could have argued that someone should have went to mark Llorente to encourage Guilfi to have a shot, and then it should have either hit Herrera or De Gea should have made the save. But I think in that situation, you've got to give all the credit to Sigurdsson for one, putting in a fantastic free kick, and two, the fact that he's so well known for his free kicks, Herrera even thought to stand on the post.
Yeah, I think that's a fair reflection of that. For Tottenham, I think Wanyama, especially in the second match, was ridiculous. There were multiple times he was our furthest player forward, and I do not know how that kept happening. He had an outside-of-the-boot pass to Kane that was just sublime on a fast break. I'm sure you're thinking, Wanyama on a fast break? Correct. Yeah, I don't know why that kept happening. I have no idea why he kept getting so far forward on the counter, but he had been terrific for the majority of the match. I think I'm going to give it to Super Jan Vertonghen, though, who was just imperious at the back again. I think a case could be made that he's actually been our best center back this season, despite how just naturally amazing and talented Toby Alderweireld is. This is pretty significantly Jan Vertonghen's best season at Tottenham, despite the fact he was in the team of the year his first year. But a lot of that came from scoring goals, and that's a topic for a whole nother day, the player evaluation based on goal scoring. But I was just so impressed with Jan, kept everything tidy at the back. There were only really two chances for Arsenal in this match, and both of them came from mistakes. But the fact that we were able to mitigate their attack so well, you know, I know that they haven't been exactly been on a terrific run of form of late, but was very, very impressed with Jan Vertonghen. And I mentioned on the show before, if you stand out as a center back without scoring a goal or without making a clear mistake, that's a very easy way for me to evaluate a center back and say, like, that player is fantastic. As if a center back who is just shielding the ball well or marshalling play or directing it inwards into the strength of the defense or man-marking somebody if that's what he's been tasked to do, if they stand out while doing things like that that aren't flashy or the cameras don't constantly track, it's always very impressive. And I think Jan Vertonghen had a terrific match on the day. If anybody disappointed... This was not Trippier's best match since getting starts, but it wasn't horrible. Really hard to say who disappointed in a 2-0 win against Arsenal at White Hart Lane for the last North London derby there. Son was great. Actually, you know, Dele Alli was kind of absent for a large part of this match, aside from the goal. We tried that in-play, quote-unquote, set piece that we do, where Toby lobs the ball on the diagonal run to Ali, just didn't come off a couple of times, but it really didn't seem like he was that involved. I mean, Son and Davis on the left were just the beginning of basically everything in the first half, just taking advantage of that Oxlade-Chamberlain thing. If we're going to do disappointed, I mean, Ozil and Alexis. If you're a neutral, surely tuning into this game, you're expecting to see more from them. In a match that meant so much on both sides, because Arsenal needed those 3 points to get back into Champions League contention. I'm not going to say anybody disappointed for us, really, but Arsenal certainly should come away from that match not feeling very good about where they stand. And Wenger can go on all he wants about 1 year being less than 20. It's correct. That's true. But I think you can really tell by the walkout in the press conference, by the nerviness from the players, by the reactions of the fans, of just trying to stamp out any little glimmer of Tottenham joy that popped up this weekend, that shows the level of concern that they have about what we're building at Tottenham. And I think that's something that we should be proud of. All right, and that will do it for us today. So if you folks would like to tell people where they could find you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
I'm Catherine Wilson. I write for ESPNFC about Middlesbrough, and you can follow me on Twitter at BaseLady.
I've been Dan from 1878.net, West Bromwich Albion fan site. Plenty of Albion content, sometimes intermittently. I'm a very busy guy. There's still plenty of Albion content there. Not that too many people are going to be that interested, to be honest. We're pretty shit at the minute. And you can find me on Twitter at TheWatts22. And I'll soon be blogging for the newspaper, the Birmingham Mail. And that'll be online and printed. So you'll be able to catch me on that soonish. Cheers for listening to us.
My name is Dylan Arvella. Thanks again for having me on. Most of my work these days is for Football South Coast in Australia. I've also been doing a bit of writing about the FFA Cup going on at the moment in Australia. Disgruntled Manchester United fan, but I understand that it is worse for some other supporters at the moment. Shout out to the Leyton Orient fans that listen to the show. Thanks for having me on Twitter, Dylan Arvella.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can also catch me on the FPL Roundtable with my good friend Rob. You can also find me over at goal.com, where I'm the lead fantasy writer. I think it's 4 articles coming from me this week, 2 Champions League, 2 Premier League. What else do we got? Oh, also DFS videos for VIPbet.com. I also write when I can for theeaglesbeak.com, so be sure to go check that out as well. All right, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.